My name is Nami Nishimura. I'm undergraduate student at SUNY Geneseo, and today I'd like to talk about the background and theory of the scalar crossovers via elliptic PDEs, which will be followed by the numerical results in the next presentation. First, I would like to start with some past works and our long-term goal. Gravitational surface in extreme mass ratio in spirals has been successfully calculated. Some are Dolan and Leuer work has calculated the gravitational surface in curl space-time in Lorentz gauge using the time domain method. They took advantage of the symmetry, axial symmetry of the curl background and applied a finite difference scheme. However, they encountered instabilities, especially for lower m equal zero and m equal one. The plots, the left plots, shows the metric perturbation for m equal two, and the middle one is m equal zero, and then right one is m equal one. These plots shows that lower m do not converge over time. So our long-term goal is to calculate the gravitational surface in the frequency domain in order to reduce the numerical computation to the set of the elliptic PDEs from the hyperbolic PDEs. One disadvantage is that a frequency domain is only applicable to the circular or near circular particle orbit. It degrades rapidly in efficiency with increasing eccentricity. Also note that the gravitational surface has been calculated in radiation gauge. However, since the second order perturbation is more convenient in Lorentz gauge, we aim to solve the Lorentz gauge surface in the frequency domain. So in summary, our long-term goal is to calculate the gravitational surface, calculate the Lorentz gauge gravitational surface in curl space-time for an extreme mass ratio binary system in frequency domain. In order to do so, we first investigate the scalar surface with using this method. Our theoretical model consists of the compact object such as a point particle carrying a scalar charge Q and moving around the massive curl black hole. We take advantage of the symmetry about the under the rotation about the spin axis in order to separate phi variable by using the M mode decomposition, and also liberate the periodicity of the time, liberate the periodicity of the source to separate T variable using the Fourier series. We use the Boyer-Lindquist coordinate to express the metric of the curl black hole, which involves the mass of the center black hole M, angular momentum J, and spin parameter A. The sign in front of the spin parameter indicates the circular orbital direction relative to the spin of the curl black hole. Before solving the scalar field equations, there are some adjustments that need to be made. First, we introduce the suitable azimuthal coordinate curl phi in order to avoid having the singular field at the event horizon of the curl black hole. Then we take advantage of the azimuthal symmetry in order to reduce the dimensionality. Since the field capital phi is periodic in curl phi, they admit M-mode decomposition, which allows us to obtain the M-mode field via inverse Fourier series. The other coordinates that we need to introduce is curl tortoise coordinate, R star. Arthur redefined the event horizon as negative infinity. The scalar field is assumed to be governed by Klein-Gordon equation, which includes the scalar wave operator and curl metric determinant G. In order to make the equations in the form of more amenable to numerical treatment, we transform to the radial factor field psi. And then M mod scalar wave operator can be expressed as following with spatial partial derivatives. One of the biggest difficulties is in conducting the numerical integration of the scalar field is the diverging behavior of the field. In order to deal with this problem, we introduce the analytically given field, puncture field, and we evolve this punctured version of the field rather than the physical field. In our notation, phi represents the physical retarded field, and phi s is the singular field. Since singular field is not exactly known, we use the local approximation of the singular field phi p. This is the punctured field. Since we assume that there is no source outside of the residual field, the source can be approximated to be finite, effective source by using the nth order punctured field. The plot on the right side shows the effective source with second, third, and fourth order. And then, as they suggest, fourth order Taylor expansion allows us to gain the finite and continuous effective source. We have developed the mathematical code to calculate the effective source, which turned out to be really slow, especially for the higher resolution. So we ended up using the effective source C code built by Barry Wardell, which was available on his website. Since the boundary condition only applies to the retarded field, not the residual field, we need to separate the field into the two regions inside the effective source and outside effective source. In order to do so, we split the numerical domain by the by auxiliary word tube tur. So outside of the word tube, we solve the scalar wave equation for the full field mode psi m. And inside of the word tube, we solve it for the residual field mode psi mr. The plot, here I'm showing the plot of the calculated scalar field psi m, which was gained by using the finite difference approximation, which will be explained in the next talk. As these plots suggest, the residual field mode is evident as a trough inside of the word tube. It also confirms that the field is symmetric about the theta axis. There are two boundary conditions that we need to impose in order to solve the equations numerically. First, I will talk about the theta boundary conditions. Each non-zero azimuthal mode has harmonic dependent on phi, showing the continuous behavior, which means that the field must vanish there. For m equals zero mode, they are symmetric across the pole, so the first derivative has to vanish there. These two regularities provide this boundary condition. Now we take a look at the R-star boundary condition. We assume that there is only ingoing radiation across the horizon when R-star is negative infinity, and only outgoing radiation when R-star is positive infinity. By taking the first derivative of the wave equations, propagating radially outward, we gain this boundary condition. Note that this is only true at R star is plus minus infinity, but in practice, the region that we solve the scalar field equations is finite, so this boundary condition only becomes approximate. So we need to improve the boundary condition, which will be talked in the next presentation as well. So here I am foreshadowing some of the results. The left one is the 3D animation of the field plotted in the Cartesian coordinate. This shows that the symmetry about the theta axis, and also it decays moving further away from the source. The right plot, the two light plots show the M-mod contribution and spin parameter contribution to the field. It is evident that the larger M-mod has smaller amplitude and shorter wavelengths. Also, spin parameter has a little effect, a subtle effect on the field profile. And in summary, we have calculated the field in frequency domain. And we also calculated cell force, which I don't think I have time to talk about. But the numerical results of the cell force and also the finite difference scheme will be talked in the next presentation. Thank you.
Great talk, Nami. So we have a few minutes for questions. Here we go. Barry, do you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Yeah, thanks very much, and thanks for the talk. I guess I'm just curious about what are the prospects of extending this to the gravitational case? How do you see? Why do you propose to do that? And what challenges are there?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
Sorry, just curious about, so you've talked about the scalar field.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of extending this to gravitational fields,
yes.
How do you plan to do that? Do you plan to do that, and how? And what challenges do you expect to encounter?
So we only investigate in the scalar cell force because we know that it's gonna be very hard to solve that in gravitational perturbation. So honestly, I don't know how we apply.
See. Okay.
Yeah.
I agree it'll be hard, but it's nice to see progress with, I guess this method has potential to work for doing solving the Lorentz gauge equations in the gravitational case. So, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. And so I think that uses up about all of our time. So give one last round of applause for everybody.